That was going to conference.
So there's some new usability stuff. The 6.0 release, they added the ribbon archives. And some of the things they've changed is the file new dialog. You can now categorize your doc types for people who had lots and lots of doc types. Your scrolling got really long. This is now just a configuration. There's no customization to do this. You can have your own folders. You can set up how you want it. And you can have the types on the other side. Right, so you can sort of group things together. It's easier to look at stuff. One of the big changes is that you can now really tell whether you're getting a template or a sample. And I'm going to use the sample a lot when I show the product. It's sort of, this is how it works. Easy. Then this is a new feature for them, actually. You could always have comments in your XML document, but now you can comment stuff out really easy, and it will preserve the markup. And then you can delete the comment, the markup. And if you publish your doc, well, it's commented out. Obviously, it won't show your published output because it's commented out, just like an XML comment. You can see that it preserves the markup inside the comment so that you can undo it after you're done. That's kind of handy. Usually, you used to have to pull content out of that to do it. One of the other improvements is a nice view of tag templates. Tag templates are one of those things, like if you have an introductory paragraph and a table or a list or some structure of tags that you use regularly over and over and over and over again, it's a structure in your writing. You can create a tag template that'll have that structure for you, and now you can edit it in a view that looks very much like the editor. Used to be that there were ways to get this, but you used a lot of working around, 10 years ago at least. But if you looked in the tag template window, all you saw were a bunch of XML ankle brackets and stuff. And if you didn't know what the tag meant, it was a little harder to deal with. This is a lot better now, because if you have tables in there, now you can look at the table and edit, and it's a lot nicer. Same thing for file entities. You can see within the file entity. Right now it's not editable, but it will be soon. That's kind of good. Here's a nice new, this is a feature a lot of customers wanted, and several customers implemented over the years. It's a find and replace attribute values. That's kind of handy. You can search for context, and so if you're looking for, say, the attribute role where the value is external, and then you can replace the ball with internal if you wanted to.
In
whatever's open in editor. So let's put it that way. I'm going to come back to that because I'm going to show that a little bit. So, but yeah, anything that's in there, you can like search or replace. One of the nice things is spell checking has had many improvements over the years. My favorite one in years past was that when you had you were missing a space between two tags that were inline, it didn't always, in some editors you don't know that there's a tag missing, you don't get a red squiggly across the both, right? But that is a spelling error, the space is missing. That was my favorite one up until this. Now you can do multiple languages spell checking in one document, which is really pretty nice. These are the languages that the proximity dictionaries and the source support, and now this is all out of the box with ArborText. Thing with ignoring internet and email addresses, that's just so that you don't get the squiggly line over every email address that you type into a document, because it should be able to recognize it, and now it does. That's kind of cool. There's improved table handling, and these are just little nicety things. The visual indicator of row height. So if you've got a row that's supposed to be fixed height, accidentally, we all know how easy it is, your mouse is on a line, it pulls the row down, and changes the row height. If it's supposed to be fixed, there's a little indicator on the side that will turn red and tell you that you've now gone past what it's supposed to be. So it's a little tiny indicator, things like that. But it makes it harder to accidentally resize something. I can't tell you how many times I've done that. The modified borders dialog is new. It's made it a lot easier. You can do color shading and patterning and alternate row colors and things like that. All that's nicely added and new in 6.0. 6.0 also saw the addition of Schematron. This is something Sun implemented by hand 15 years ago. They had a process where you were not allowed to have two titles in a row that didn't have a paragraph between them that had content in it. So it couldn't just be an empty paragraph. It had to be content in it. And so they would do this when you published or checked in, they'd run a little process and would look and see if you had two titles in a row that didn't have a paragraph between them, and they would catch it as an error, and they'd throw it back at you. And here are all the errors in your book. We had authors at Juniper who would insert a blank, an empty paragraph that they didn't like the way the page broke. Schematron can catch that kind of thing, too. Schematron is an ISO standard. It is pretty well known. It enforces business rules, not things that DTDs and schemas can't check. And now this is built into check completeness. Check completeness is a feature in ArborCheck that will let you verify that your document not only has all the required elements and in order, because it doesn't let you do that unless you, doesn't let you get out of valid XML unless you really try. But you know, there's other things that are required that you maybe were optional, but you haven't quite gotten right. It'll do that now. It'll verify the business rules also with Schematron, which is kind of nice. And it includes a whole bunch of samples on how to use that. That's what Schematron looks like. I just slid it around. There you go. Some little tiny other things that are happening. You can now join multiple paragraphs together in like a single click. Used to have to, if you had like three bullets in a row, you used to have to add them one at a time together to merge them into one bullet. Now you can just select the whole set of bullets and say, turn this into a multi-paragraph bullet, and you're done. And that's kind of nice. Equations now are parsed like other markup. That means there's no longer any PIs used to do equation markups. It also means there's no limit on your equations in editor, and that used to be the case. Math in XML, we all know, is kind of not that simple either anyway. You're pretty much using Matplotlib if you're using anything at all. AP, the spelling file, there used to be two, one for acceptable spelling things and things that were supposed to be rejected. So you didn't want anyone to ever use can't. You put that in the rejected file and make sure that no one ever used it. Now it's all one file. It's a lot easier to deal with. One of the other things that's cool is any preference that has a file listing is now in a sub-window. So like if you've ever gone to your computer and changed the environment variables in the path, and you have to scroll way off into the distance and you hope that you're actually getting it right, right? It's that kind of thing. That's now a sub-menu, and you can look at it like this instead of in one long string of files, which is kind of handy. That's the split P, joint P elements up at the top, for example. Some DITA stuff. DITA 1.2 is now supported in Editor. Here's some things that are kind of handy for people who have ArborText Content Manager or Windchill, which is the content management system behind ArborText and PTC. Now the resource manager, you can right-click, you can check out your documents, you can search for it through the repository, you can find out where it's used. All the kinds of things you'd want to be able to have in your repository are now in that right-click context menu right inside of the resource manager. That's kind of handy. Other improvements, this one was an obvious one. It took them a while to do. The resource manager has three tabs. And when you used to click between tabs, it would automatically restart where you were looking. So now those are synchronized. So if you were accidentally looking in the cross-reference for where I'm going to cross-reference, you're like, no, I meant to do a conref, you don't have to re-navigate to where it was that you were just looking. You should probably found it already in real-time. The other thing that's nice is it's got this history tab now, so it'll show you the recent directories you were just looking in. So, like, I just made a cross-reference 10 minutes ago. Where was that file? You go to the history, and it'll pop up where you were, which is really kind of nice. And that's new. Other stuff, specializations are now a lot easier. And we're going to talk about the point you just made, the question you just asked. And this has to do with the resolved document for editing and the resolved document for styling. ArborText has a notion of all the DITA pieces, but also something that they call DITA base, where you can look at the whole thing as it's going through the pipeline. When you did a specialization, you used to have to build those pieces yourself also. It was a lot of time, it was a lot of effort, a lot of work. It was often a little bit confusing. And especially like if you're doing the math specialization and adding that into DITA, you always had to do it. So now that is automatically generated by Editor. And so because it really isn't a sort of automated thing. It's really if I were looking at DITA all in one DTD, what would it look like and how do I look at it? And that's what it does. And you can look at and resolve document for editing and resolve document for style. I'll show you both of these. The editing one lets you look at everything in one view and you can touch it and change it. Resolve document for styling shows you what your document looks like when it's going through the publishing pipeline so that you know that you are styling for what's really there and what's really happening. So these things are now both automatically generated, and you can work in both of them. And you can do it in both a tick and map. It doesn't really make any difference, and both are editable. Key ref support, this is day one tot 2. Can't claim to be a good Dittle 1.2 expert. I'm really not. My example is a lot simpler than these windows here. So, but this is the key-based references, right? You want to be able to define these references at a glow level and be able to drop, change their value as you do a special version of the book, right? So, God, these graphics are horrible. You have a whole bunch of keys that you define. They can be graphics, they can be topics, they can point at other things, right? And you want your Dittle map to have a reference to the keys. So, for example, I'll show this to you in my example. It's kind of hard to get unless you're really into it right away. But you can name something as being, say, the cover graphic. And in one map, it's defined one way. And in another map, it's defined a different way. But they're both called cover map. So that when you run one book or the other, you'll get the right graphic thrown in, right? So it's kind of like Dittle Val or profiling, like we call it. But it lets you sort of abstract all that stuff and replace it easier, which is kind of nice. And this is all included in the check completeness. So make sure that when you are working with key references in your file, you want to make sure there are defined values for all of them. And the check completeness catch if you're using one that isn't defined, or if you define one that, or you reference one that isn't there, or the other. And it will resolve in the view which reference you're actually using. So if you've defined it one way or expect it's defined one way, and you're looking at it and it's different, it'll catch that kind of thing for you. Key references are resolved both in publishing and in the editor view. Is there a question? Yeah, here, Bart. Okay. This is kind of what the maps look like, and it's horrible. It's still doesn't look good. So when we talk about key references, and I'll show this to you with the sample, when we talk about key references, it's usually, when we talk about best practices for it, you sort of thinking in three levels, and it starts to get kind of complicated. At the first level, you've got your key references, all your keys defined and what their values are. Then you have a map that includes those key references and all the content that's using them, right? So that's sort of your first level map. You pull the keys out into like an external file. So now if you want to make a variant of that book, like I now have the special router, right? It's 90% the change, but you're going to change three key references because you're going to change probably the product view look graphic, probably may change a couple of instructions, maybe a maintenance schedule or something like that. And so you would... In your new map, you'd include the other map, right, that has the actual defined book, and then you're going to override the stuff that you want to change. Maybe three files and a key value change, and you only have to have this little map up here. And then it'll all do the right resolving. Sometimes it gets a little hard to track and keep sense of where things are, but I'll show it to you in the editor. That was better. And that's kind of what it looks like. You just replace the key value. So we'll just look and see what it looks like. I have APP, but I'm not going to show that to you. This is editor. Looks like every other editor. Doesn't look scary. Looks pretty, I mean, it's like what you'd expect from an authoring application. The toolbars you can customize and change, all those kinds of things. So file, new. Here's our new dialog. And we're going to look. It comes with the learning specialization, because that's part of 1.2. It also comes with the service manual application, which is a specialization ArborText has built, especially for mechanical, for heavy manufacturers who want to have troubleshooting procedures or side-by-side stuff, things like that are very more common to their content. That's sort of their main focus anyway. So we're going to look at a topic. I'm going to choose the sample radio button. Sample radio button will fill in a lot of sample content, so I don't have to type everything and we don't all have to be bored. when it loads a document, it's validating, it's doing all kinds of stuff, and this is sort of what it looks like. I can turn the tags off, an author just like it looks. I can click on a word. I can hit bold. It'll automatically insert the correct markup for this topic or this organization or whatever doc type I'm using. That's configured in the doc types. I can underline. I can turn this into a, I can turn this paragraph into a bullet. It did not fall. That's a type that I have to the short description. I can't change a short description into a bullet. I can change a paragraph into a bullet, right? All those kinds of things. So undo, edit, undo, control Z, just like you'd expect it to work. These are three paragraphs here. This is the join P elements. Now I have one paragraph, right? This is kind of what you'd expect to happen. It used to have to join them one by one. Now it's pretty simple. Same thing can happen for list items. I'm going to turn the tags on just so I can see where they are. And I can edit. I have these. Open list. Edit. Join list items. So now I have one list item with 2, 3, 4 paragraphs. Right, just like you'd expect to find from bulleted list. It's pretty. These are little things that just make it easier. Let's see. So next thing on the list was in the tool. Well, we'll go this way. Tools preferences. Here's that file locations. If I want to work with the catalogs here, I can do that, and I can change the order so I can work with the precedents. Which style sheet has more precedents? Which catalog? Which path item? You know, those kinds of things make a difference. That's pretty easy. Let's see if I've got my key rep example. No, I don't want that. I used to have this in Crusoe as my demonstration content, mostly because it is arguably the oldest novel ever written, and there are versions to, within the last 10 years there was a version. The movie with Tom Hanks comes to mind. 100 years later, 200 years, we're still seeing versions. Who knows how old your content will be? You never know. So in this case, I've got a key defined, and I've set the cover image to a particular image, and let's take a look at that image appears in this file. So let's open the file, and this is what it looks like. It's a picture of the old book. I got this out of Project Gutenberg, converted to Jitta. Pretty simple. And if I publish the map, publish PDF, as you can see down in the toolbar that it's doing all the pre-processing, all the post-processing. It's actually publishing with Public Engine here on the laptop, so it's doing all kinds of stuff.
What do you get with the command prompt there?
So the command prompt is something we.
You don't have to go too far. Just.
It so ArborText is completely everything in the interface that you see, everything in the publishing pipeline is open by API, and the command line lets you execute ACL commands so you can test them before you're going, or you can load things or scripts and other stuff. And so there you go. So here we have the other book. And if I open the Robinson Crusoe on Mars map, I'll sort of look at that here real quick. This is what the map looks like. All it is including the other map and changing the cover image key wrap, right? So that one has the Robinson Crusoe image on Mars for that value, right? But otherwise, it's including the other map. So everything that's in there, all the content that's in there is going to be in here, right? Because I'm not changing anything at all. And we can publish that one too. So the key wraps, that's going to take a bit of learning, even especially for me, because I was not paying attention until the spec came out, of course. But it's a little bit tricky, but it takes a little, I think it's going to be a really handy feature.
Because this other key map is defined before the one, the nested one, it takes precedence?
Yep. So here's Robinson Crusoe on Mars, right? And so if I'd had other key references, if I'd had certain product names or I'd had any number of procedures, I can override the ones that I pick in the new map, include the old map, and everything will work the way that it should. It's similar to the way specialization, right? If you have this, you fall back, you know what processing should happen. And that's really, really kind of handy and nice. And that's all really good stuff. So let's just look at one of them. So now if I close the map and I just open the introduction file itself, it won't have either one of those graphics, right? Because one map defined it one way, the next map up defined it a different way, and it was overriding each time down. Right? And that's really the power of the Keyer stuff. And it's all perfectly, like it's all implemented and included here. And that's really very nice.
So it's based on how you access the file as to what's rendered?
So in this case, I'm not looking from the map level, right. So I don't have the context of the overridden value.
So it infers, based on how you access the file, what key maps to apply.
Yep. If I'm working at the bigger map level that has dereft definitions, it will show me in the editor and in the publishing the one that I intend to be working with. Right? And that's really what kind of really what should happen. And that's pretty good. So this kind of overriding behavior is... you see that in XSL style sheet programming. You'll see some base things defined. If you have style sheets included in other style sheets, the last definition wins. Same kind of idea. It's also true with styler. So I'll show you your question. Also with this one. There's two ways to look. So we're talking about the resolved document for editing and the resolved document for styling. The resolved document for editing lets me take this map. I can come down. Down here, edit resolved document for editing. It's going to do a lot of processing. And what you see, all the text from all the files in the map. So I can edit any one of the files, but I can see them all in context. This little green dotted line shows me the boundaries of each file that was included in the map and that now I'm editing. That license file doesn't have any XML in it, but so you can see where each piece is. And again, I'm looking at the map, so I see the correct graphic for this map in this context. All that stuff is there. And so this is for editing. If you notice, I'm not in Windchill. I did not check this out of Windchill. If this were in a content management system that had an adapter that works with ArborText, it would tell me these are not checked out, so I wouldn't be able to edit them. But I can still look at them all in context. And that's kind of good. Now we're going to go back to the map, and I'm going to show you what the resolved document for styling looks like. And this is the document after it's applied all of the data processing and all of every other processing, and you can see, I'll turn the tags on, you'll see that there's a lot more stuff here. It's got the collection type, it's got all this, so that when you're doing style sheet development, you can see what it looks like in the publishing pipeline, and you know that you're styling the right thing. You're styling it in the context that it actually needs to be. Let's try to open a style sheet example. And I'm going to add one on the desktop. That was not it. I do this one. So ArborText makes it easy for you to upgrade both the editor and your customizations to DITA in sort of one swoop. Because it's generating the database, the resolved document for editing and styling, you can take the base style sheet that ships with ArborText, pull it out, create a read-only copy, and include it as a module in your new style sheet so that you only have to style those things you want to change. You don't have to write style for everything that is. You don't have to change all of it. You only have to change those pieces you want. So, for example, I think down here I've got var name. This is the one. You can see the yellow box, the white box and the blue and the white. You can see that this one overrides the definition in the included module. So, this style sheet I wrote with ArborText 5.4, when I wanted it to open it here at 6.0, all I had to do was take the 6.0 database style sheet, put it in this directory with my file, and I've got all the new elements, all the learning specialization, all of that stuff is now included in my style sheet, and I don't have to make any new changes when I upgrade the software. And that's really kind of handy. And, you know, you see this as it's sort of italicized and it's read-only, so I'm not changing the base style sheet. I'm not changing the one that ships with ArborText. I'm only changing my style sheet. And it makes sure that I have everything, which is really pretty good. I can publish, you know, I can publish a preview PDF or web or HTML help or RTF or any of those all come from there. And that's pretty simple. I'm going to do file, new, show one more thing, and then we'll pretty much end early access. It's not really, we'll ask some questions to the topic. I don't want sample content this time. And in my example folder, desktop, please. We have the zebra puzzle from Wikipedia, which I love. It's one of those ones where you who's in the red house and eats coffee. I can just copy the whole thing and paste. I get bullets, I get cross-reference, I get all the things that were in the Word document. I'm not getting headings because, for some reason, I'm not really sure why. But, like, all the paragraphs are here, all the cross-references you'd expect, the italics where it's supposed to be. If I had graphics, those would be here also. Likewise, if I take the answers from Excel and I copy and paste, I get the table. If you don't have too many pages to do, that's fine. If you have more than 100, don't do this. More than 100 pages is just not worth it. If you have 1,000 pages, definitely don't do this. Find somebody else to do it. Having done a bunch, that's how it works. So the other thing that's interesting about Styler is it's a multi-style sheet. Style sheet. Let's open this back. Add the other one. The side by side looks cool. We just got all that. You can create style outputs from in one style sheet, whether it's RTF or HTML or PDF. You can control it all here. So Styler creates an XML file. It's called a Styler sheet. It's got a DTD or a schema, and it's all XML. But it's sort of a top-level schema that tells the publishing tools what to do in which case. So if you want it, if you want to specify that only when I go to Word should it do, you should change the color in one way or another. When I do HTML, it should make cross-references look like this. When I go to print, it should look like this. Right, you don't have page sets in print, but you can manage it all in one place. You don't have, like, teen style that you're managing, or, God forbid, one of the projects we have, one base style sheet and 15 variants that sort of build from it. Amazing work of architecture, but, you know, it's now getting a little hard to manage 4 years in. So this is kind of nice, and it does all of that stuff, too. As I said, the now default engine is APP. So you get all the... You get all the side-by-side synoptic alignment stuff. So like the Canadian legislature, one side is French, one side is English, and they have to line up exactly. And as the French paragraph is maybe longer than the English one, you need extra space and then the two to line up and continue. They use this kind of publishing. Magazines will use this. You say, hey, for example, my paper is very thin. I've got a big, thick head graphic. On this side, advertising, I better be having matching big black graphic on the other side of the page. And that's a rule you can define in APP. It's not always easy or pretty, and it's becoming better because Styler is now APP and going this way. And there's other stuff, like you can export your CSS for your HTML, your DMP file, all the things that you'd expect to have are part of it. So that's any kind of questions. It's not really exciting when you have a...
Please. Well, the first question that I originally had was how you would search across blocks, search and replace across blocks.
So it is all document per edit. All ones that are in that map, at least, you can search and replace across that set.
So what is performance like if you, say, have 100 files open in the editor?
That's pretty fast. I haven't seen any performance issues or heard of any. And they've been, like, customers have been doing search and replace for attributes, which that kind of thing was just harder to find, or you're more likely to have more cases.
Is that a feature or is it a new version, or is that a...
The search and replace attribute is now packaged with PTC's Arbitrage. It used to be, a couple of people had implemented it themselves. It's just part of it. So the other half of what we're talking about, search and replace across a lot of aisles, I'm uncertain as to where the boundary for that question ends, right? There is, at some level, that becomes a content management question, right? You don't have all the files open, but you want to search and replace the whole bunch in the repository, and that would be through WinShow, which is, I'm not really showing that. I mean, I can show you what it is, but they just had a major release also. And it looks,
so if you checked all out at one time, it would be accessing your checked out version.
Yes.
It would be realistic to search across.
Yes, you could. Especially in the resolved document for editing. Always be careful because you don't know where everybody else is using those files. That's where the where used comes in, but that's part of the content management system and not really Arbitrage. It's integrated, right? I can, if I had it working, I think, in the resource manager, if I had WinShow up and running and configured for this, it would, you have to right click and say check out or search where used, and it would go into the repository and look around and give you a report on all the places that that topic is used.
Oh man, that's great.
And that would be much better, right? So little things like that make your job a little bit easier. And that really, this last release was all about those little things to make it just a little bit easier. More questions? Other questions? You guys have two. You go first.
The company and their suite of products, is there anything new and interesting in general with them for a year or year and a half or so?
So, company-wise, they formed the Arbitrage business unit a year and a half ago to give it its own profit and loss, its own, like, they now have business metrics to meet and find. So they now have developers that are allocated and resources, and they're no longer the bottom of the barrel of money, right? Hey, we've given all this money to WinShow and ProE, and there's nothing left for you. Right? So they've started doing a couple of conferences this year. They're at 3, I think. And the biggest change for them, for customers, was that you work with the channel now. You don't work directly with Arbitrage, which was what was the case, before they were acquired. That took a long time for all of us to get used to. And that's really new what to make of that, because it's not the usual case for players in that space, right? X amount of you buy from them. I think Authorit has channel, but I don't really, I'm pretty sure that those guys have channel. There's a couple of other players that do. Madcap doesn't. They're all corporate, right? So, it's just kind of a weird thing. But all the developers are still there. Several people retired or moved to other companies. They've just got rid of a bunch of, unfortunately, writers in the WinShow division. They had a layoff, but no one in Arbitrage, as far as I know, has been touched. People have been looking really hard and wide. PTC is scouring the world for anybody who knows Arbitrage. And they can't find anyone. They come to me once a week and say, hey, oh, sorry, I realize you're a partner. They haven't stopped development. They are still working on it. Their integration with WinShow is getting stronger. So it's going to become pretty quick. You can create a data map in WinShow and, do that and have it automatically built that way.
Are they still in the developers in
that office? They are. They did not have to move to Massachusetts. Not that any of us. I mean, I like Boston, but it's too cold there. If it were not so north, I'd be fine.
Sure. One of the other things that Cindy did at one point, too, that's
draining and all that. Does this editor support that? Any of that?
So, how it does, I don't know.
Like I found, for instance, I was doing an example.
Yeah.
I did open toolkit.
Yeah.
And I created this metadata map and all this.
Yeah.
And processed it, but it didn't do anything with it.
That seems weird.
Well, that was I was just wondering if that, it seemed to me from what I was reading it that in order to do it right, you'd have to, when you were adding a keyword to a file, you'd have to be in the context of a map to find what the valid keywords could be.
Right, so that's part of this key wrap. No, I'd say it's more close to the key ref. Scott, do you know it's really how it works?
No.
See, I think it's more that, it's probably more that way, because if you're looking for the context and you want to have it published all the way through the pipeline, that's where it's going to be. If it's attributes, metadata attributes, if it's part of the spec, it's in there. Yeah.
Well, so. If it's implemented. Just because it's in the spec doesn't mean it really works that way.
Yeah, they're one of the few. Yeah.
Right. Those are different people.
Yeah, I don't know. It was not in my training for 6.0. I can certainly ask that question if you want to write it up for me. I will pass it through and ask the PM. So as far as I know.
What about?
They sit on the committee, certainly. So.
Code ref. That get implemented?
Do you know where that is?
It's something you'd insert into a code block. It's sort of one of the very overlooked cool features of DITA 1.2. It lets you reference a non-DITA file.
Yep.
So basically when you do that, though, you should get a dialog that lets you browse to some
right
chunk of code,
yeah.
Non-DITA, so like a text file of some kind.
That's
and it would
done to the href, right?
Stuff it in, yeah.
Yeah, we
so
do that.
It would then put in that block, formatted properly.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know necessarily where all the things are, but that for them, it's just another, it's in the database how it should be handled, so if I don't touch it and I implement the database in my style sheet, it'll go as planned,
mm-hmm.
Right? And I don't have to do any special formatting or any control over it, which is handy. Jeff, did you have one?
Are we and Arbortext at all integrated?
They are.
Really?
They are. On two fronts.
Okay.
One, through the Windchill mechanism, kind of. The canonical route is to take ProE and pull it into what's called Arbortext IsoDraw. It used to be Itito IsoDraw. And then IsoDraw is an author's tool, a graphic artist tool. It's not a CAD person's tool. So it'll let you explode the diagram automatically. It'll let you create call-out blocks. And if the engineer changes the drawing, the CAD drawing, the next time you open it in IsoDraw, it'll say, hey, he added four more bolts. Do you want to add those to yours? And it'll automatically put them in or let you make that decision, but still leave your graphic exploded, right? So it doesn't make you do your stuff over again. If you have ProE and Windchill, all that stuff is automatically done in behind the scenes. So it'll create the IsoDraw visualization version that you can then put into Arbortext Editor. And it will run IsoDraw graphics, no problem. You can do animations. You can do all the stuff that you would do. In an IsoDraw graphic and show it right in there. And then you pick which view you want to be in print. You pick what you want to happen when you go to HTML. Right? So some of that stuff you have to decide. But yeah, that's all part of it.
So are you seeing a lot of Arbortext growth in shops? People already use it?
That's where PTC's focus is. Their focus really is the manufacturing folks. Because one of the things that they do is say you create this is why the DITA map is going to become part of Content Manager. Right now, the product structure is in there. So all the CAD pieces are there. All the associated spec stuff is there. So you can associate documents or pieces of documents, topics and things, with various parts. So when they create a new product and they pull all these parts into the new structure, all the pieces of documents that were associated could also go too. And then you have the holes for the new content that needs to be written, right? But you know right away where those holes are, which pieces are being reused. And that's kind of, and that's, we're talking about the integration, that's really where it is.
So that's determined by the key ref?
No, that's all in the content management system. It's all in Arbortext Content Manager, also known as Windchill. That's a product, that's a key ref thing right there. It's all Windchill out for Arbortext Content Manager, all the rest of the stuff's the same. That's exactly how they, that's probably why there are not
so
as many writers.
These are products that are integrated.
Yes.
And that's why others are very clumsy, because they're kind of glued together.
It all depends, right? It depends on your needs and your requirements. Windchill and Arbortext are not the right solution for everyone. You know, I mean, I work with them, but it's not the right answer for everybody. It is, however, why Arbortext dropped off the map the last 6 years. You know, part of the reason they dropped off the map was, you know, they were acquired by PTC, and PTC said, you will make it work, right? Not, we've acquired your product, and we're just going to pretend they all work together. No, you will make it work. So when their customer, a big Caterpillar, calls them and says, hey, this is broken, fix it, there's no two vendors on the phone, who's your fault, you will fix it, right? So that's sort of their way of doing things, their way of the world.
So that was an investment over time.
It was. It was.
Investment.
It was, and that's why it's as integrated as it is. So, but anyway, look like you have a question. So, yeah, you're just like, hmm. I don't know about that. So, anything else?
Is there any special process you need for localization if you have like 13 languages that you're supporting?
There is a translation package that right now is not part of Windchill. It will be part of Windchill 11. Right now it's a plug-in from the you got to get it from a partner, basically. It plugs into Windchill, and you can set up a workflow that says, you know, I want it now to go into translation. This file gets identified, packaged up, shipped off to your vendor, and then it comes back in, and it's a representation of the source. So in the Windchill world, what you have is, you know, some source of truth that's your initial starting point, and then things are represented. The PDF is a representation of the source. The HTML is a representation of the source, right? You're working in your archive format, not in your delivery format, right? And so Spanish just becomes a version of the source, right? And then there's the PDF of the Spanish version of, it's associative, and that's kind of their view of the world.
Sure. What kind of people are there to verify the translation? I mean, you have your language experts, I guess, in your different languages, and when it comes back to you, do you have to worry about the quality of the translation?
I would say that's between you and your vendor to diagnose who's responsible for that.
That's basically determined. It's not the end where the translator goes. The translator is a separate entity.
Right. So right now, the translation memory you can get access to, but the translator themselves, if you send the file out to translation, you've basically packaged an FTP to somebody else. It comes back to you. It's inserted into the right location. It's associated with the source, so that when you go look at the source, you can see that all the Spanish ones are there. Maybe one's missing because it's still out. Right? But the software doesn't do any validation of Spanish. Usually you have somebody who's in-country or is a native speaker to check what the translator did.
So the fact that it's crawled when it goes out and come back in means that there could be any number of diffs every time it's retranslated or changed in any way.
Yep.
It doesn't really affect where it's coming back in.
No. The export and the import is automated. That translation package is what's getting integrated into Windchill. Right now it's a separate piece. It's being integrated.
So if you have 20 users writers using this tool, you can basically create this style sheet, which is common to all of them. You can have an elements list and an attributes list that is all constrained according to what kind of output you want.
Yeah. So Windchill does have like a set of default metadata. You can push and pull in and out. So if you wanted to pull out, so this at Gilbane in December in Boston, we had a workflow set up where if I checked in and did a topic, it would go to the workflow, it would pull the short description out and put it in the metadata, and if it passed the workflow and came back approved, it would automatically go to the Twitter stream. Right, so if you had customers watching for a topic, it could say, hey, your topic that you watch is updated. I mean, it's not real exciting, but, you know, it's kind of fun to do. And I got to play with the Twitter API. How exciting is that? You know, it made for a great demo. You know, it's kind of fun. So that kind of stuff, you know, everything pretty much in Arbortext and Windchill is there's APIs for all of it, and there's not much you can't do.
Impresses me with the XML, you basically are moving your mouse every single time you're going to a different tag, and it looks like for this you have a lot of that table, like the join and split and things like that, that are pretty automatic. Is that pretty much uniform across the tool, or do you have a lot of that hand work that you have to do?
So there's at least three ways to do anything in Arbortext. To insert a tag, I can think of four. And depending on whether you want to have some ACL scripts to make it so that, like, the last tag you inserted is automatically what normally gets inserted if you hit a key, I mean, you can do that kind of thing. I don't usually encourage that. I'm also not a control character. I'm not a keyboard person. As humans, we're actually better at motor skills, not at memory. So that's why you see a lot of stuff in the mouse. But that's just sort of one of those things. My memory gets worse every day that passes. So anyway. So there's some of that stuff that's mouse driven, but you know everything in the UI is available to scripting. That's what's in the Monster Garage twice a month. So any questions? Well, exciting presentation. I could have done some more fun, but, you know.
Great to see it.
Yeah, nobody's seen it in, like, years, so.
So this is recent publication. Yeah, how recent?
6.0 came out, when did I cancel? April. It came out in April. We booked it really tight, and I'm like, it's not going to be out. And it was out, like, an hour before I would have presented. I couldn't have gotten it installed.
About a month.
Time, so about 2 months. Windchill came out couple of weeks ago, Windchill 10, it's got issues. I always tell people do not install the first version. Always go for the point 10 release, the first release out, first point release. Just good practice, whatever software you're using. But anyway, thanks for having me.
Super.
No.